Welcome to season two of the Musicians Insider. I'm your host, Cronus, and once again, we have another interesting guest. This time, I've got a fellow computer programmer online person with musician background and some stuff that I really want to learn about. So I want to introduce you to Jared Judge, and tell us about yourself. Tell us why you thought it would be good to connect with me and what you want to tell the world on our podcast and how you can help musicians do what they're trying to do.
Yeah, awesome. Well, thank you so much for having me. Super excited. I am a musician, but I'm also web nerd, tech guy. So my whole thing is I've been a musician all my life, and I did the classical route, which I know is different than kind of the most of your guests here. But when it comes down to it, music is all kind of the same. Like, we all have these goals of making music and playing music, and it's so much fun to play music, and we all want to reach a bigger stage. But the problem, and I think I'm pretty safe in saying this for all types of musicians, is that they don't teach the business early enough, and some people don't learn it ever. Is that fair to say?
I would say that when you say they and you say teach, it's like, well, teachers generally have like one class they're teaching in their specialty, but they're not going to show you how to be a professional musician. You just have to go to sessions, learn not to do things because you saw someone else do them, and hopefully have a mentor to tell you what not to do so you don't have to learn and you can skip some steps. There's a lot of things not to do, like things like wrapping cables wrong, you know, like just so many little stupid things that if you don't know this, then you're clearly not in the industry. So
for sure. But if you think about other industries, there is career training, like specifically how to approach the business of your art. It's not true for all industries, but like our industry is severely lacking that. Like you mentioned, you have to learn it the hard way. And to me, that's a shame. Like that prevents a lot of young musicians who get into this with the dreams of being the next insert big name artist here. It prevents them from keeping to pursue that goal, because once they realize there are things that they were never taught or they never learned, if they start to combat against that friction, many of them will give up.
Well, also those things they don't know, they end up depending on someone else to do them. And then that's when your whole career is dependent on someone else's schedule who you're not paying, or you are paying, but maybe you're not paying them what they would want to help your career the way that they could help it, or vice versa. And what ruins the industry, I find, is the people who they tell you you're going to be a star and then ask you for a bunch of money, and you realize that this is their income and that's all it really is. And that's, you have to understand that.
Yeah, for sure. Like, I get hit up on Instagram all the time with these sleazy pitches saying, like, I'll promote you to my 10K followers for, like, $50. Like, okay, no thanks. There are other ways to build your live music business. So that's kind of my whole approach, is, like, I believe that each musician not only has to be an excellent musician, but also has to learn the business and be their own business owner of their music career. Which I know that you've had some guests on here that kind of talk about that too. So I'll tell you my story.
Yeah, go ahead. I want to hear all about it.
Yeah, so I went to music school once for my undergraduate degree in music education. And then I actually taught public school music. I was an elementary general music teacher. So I was on the ground playing guitar and singing with kindergartners all the way through fifth graders, teaching them how to play clarinet for the first time. Then I taught high school band, which was an incredible experience. I loved that age group. It was so much fun to conduct them, because I'm a conductor, and I'm very passionate about like making group music and making it sound awesome. Exactly right. You can see me kind of gesturing here.
I played clarinet in high school band, so this is great.
Oh, awesome. Do you still play?
I would really like to, but I had done... I switched full on to guitar and other things, and I don't have a clarinet. I actually recently tried to buy one and just never followed up on like the orchestrating purchasing it. And I had some dental work done since I was younger, so I haven't really... I tried it at NAMM, and I was like, wow, I need to do this again. I was a first B-flat, and I went from being third to first pretty quickly in 4 years. And so I would love to play again and put it through a distorted guitar amp with delay and use Ableton to mess it up.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
So maybe we'll see some clarinet somewhere, but it's not like my number one thing. I don't want to be the clarinet Kenny G guy right now.
Yeah. Oh, in the string world, there's some really cool like six string violinists who are doing some amazing things with distorted amps and pedals and that kind of thing.
Oh, yeah.
So when I was teaching high school band, I got the bug for conducting at a professional level. I just wanted to be an opera or a symphony conductor. And so that's when I went back to grad school to get my orchestra conducting degree. So that took me from New Jersey to Wisconsin, a little colder place, but I was excited to learn more music. And that's exactly what I learned was more music, more techniques. I was getting history lessons and theory lessons and even like music library sciences, which was all really, some of it was really interesting stuff. Some of it I didn't need. Like, why would I need music library sciences?
Well, I mean, it depends what you're doing, right? You might need to, learn how to categorize all the stuff that you're setting up for syncing,
Yeah, for sure.
If you're, I've got some friends who are killing it in the licensing arena, and organization of what you're doing is it's all project management.
Yeah, definitely. I wasn't interested in syncing. I was interested in being an opera conductor,
Interesting.
which typically opera and symphony conductors have their own music librarians that support the orchestra.
Okay,
It's good
gotcha.
to know about those things, but you don't have to like do them.
And it kind of reminds me of his choir. You have to deal with all the like the music. Because I don't do choir much, but I like a couple years ago I jumped in a choir just to kind of prepare for being to doing an album again. So I was singing church choir stuff at Convalescent Homes in LA. It was kind of nice. It was a nice thing to do for people who had no one. But this year I sang with a local my old piano teacher Bob Brewer when I was like 11 or something. He's now a choir guy, and we were at this crazy martyr shrine historical place that the Pope came to, and they were shooting a song that he wrote, which is a very churchy type song. I'm not a church person, but I did go to Anglican church when I was little, so I sang some of their music. Just they needed a high tenor to do some parts and a bit of a lower part, so I just sang all that, and they put it all together, and it was kind of neat to like have your old piano teacher put together a Zoom video of all this sheet music. I haven't really worked in a choir situation before, but it feels more like band, like more like concert band. So I feel
Yeah.
you. I know where you're coming from. I have still got some of that, even though we're trying to be metalheads now or whatever you call it.
Yeah, that's awesome though. What a great experience to connect with your former teacher.
Yeah.
So the thing that like one of the only pieces of career advice that I did get in music school was to take auditions, which we're all kind of familiar with the audition format. Many people think like America's Got Talent or I don't know, American Idol or something like that. But in the classical music world, this is how you get your job is, you find one of the best symphonies that you feel like you could potentially fit in with, and then you apply to audition. Some people get accepted to audition, many of them don't. And then out of the hundreds of people who audition for this one spot, only one of them gets it.
Gotcha.
Sometimes they don't even fill the spot if they don't find somebody who's qualified enough. So it's an extremely competitive landscape, and you can see exactly how the pipeline works, where if you're not the 0.5% of talented people, you're not going to get that job. So you have to try, and eventually you'll give up if you don't make it.
So is the audition process for that done where people kind of like, do you know which city you really want and you pick a different city because you can't get that harmonic, full harmonic orchestra? Like, how does that work? And is there a best one to be in? Which is the top of the pops here?
Yeah, I mean, everyone has different opinions on who's the best. Like,
East
people will
Coast,
say
West Coast.
Philadelphia is the best string section. I want to be in that section. Or Chicago has the best brass section. I want to be in Chicago. So
Okay.
people do have their lists, their dream lists. But,
What's your dream list? Where do you want to be?
the I actually have shifted my goals. I don't want to do that anymore.
Awesome.
Yeah. But, like, that's a thing, though. People do have their dream orchestras, but then they realize like there are hundreds of musicians internationally competing for that one city, even if it's your hometown city. Like my hometown in Milwaukee, most of the people who apply for the jobs in Milwaukee are from across the country or even out of the country. So the reality is most musicians don't win their dream job. So that's when I was in grad school, about to graduate. I was a couple months away. And I was taking these auditions, flying across the country, trying to do these auditions. And I actually had shifted. I became interested in military music, so I wanted to be a Air Force band conductor.
Oh, cool.
So I flew to Washington, D.C. while I was still in grad school, and I got past the first round and was accepted to do an in-person audition with the Air Force band in D.C. And so I get there, they put you into like a room by yourself and a piano. It's like, we'll call you when we're ready. So they call me, I get to conduct the Air Force band, which that was one of the most thrilling musical experiences of my life.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's like 100 of the nation's best military musicians all staring up at me while I have to wave my hands around and make magic, you know? And they sounded amazing. Like, it was one of the few experiences where I felt like,
They
as a
actually
con.
made the music you're asking them to make. Give me
Yep.
that. Give me this.
They were making more music than I was asking them to make. So it was, I thought I did pretty well. And then afterwards, the commander of the band says, like, come with me to my office and shut the door behind you. So I was like really excited. I thought that meant I got my job. Yay. So then he said to me, like, that was a great audition. You're clearly a talented musician, but we cannot offer you the job at this time.
Any reason?
He said I wasn't experienced enough.
Interesting.
So
Well, maybe
he.
he saw how excited you were and that this was maybe bigger than you've ever done at that point, and he could tell just by the emotion that you're expressing, and he wants someone who'd done it before.
That's entirely possible.
It's auditions, you got to understand. I've actually done acting and stuff. I'm trained in that as well, and I don't care about being an actor, but I got trained in it just because I knew I needed to. And it's all about whether the director or the people that are hiring, if you do you look like what they want as well as like, and if you're not in their mind what they were looking for, there's nothing you can do, no matter what you do, to blow them away.
Yeah, that's you hit the nail on the head. Your fate is in one person's hands.
And if you let that stop you from auditioning again, you're an idiot and you don't deserve it.
See, that's where I disagree with you.
I mean, if you let that feeling make you stop, you think, oh, that's I suck. No, if you don't let them beat you down, like don't let it be because you think you didn't do well enough. You just weren't what they needed at the moment. Like that's what I'm saying.
Sure. Yeah. No, I agree with you that you shouldn't let the results of auditions affect your value, self-worth, because it's just what other people are looking for their specific
It's
situation.
okay to say it's not for me. That's totally cool, and I'm 100% behind
Yeah.
that.
So when I got back from this Air Force band audition, I told my professors what happened, and they were like, yeah, they basically said the same thing as you, like, don't give up, keep going. But I was about to graduate with no job, which was scary, because how am I going to pay my rent? How am I going to buy food? And eventually I want a family. How am I going to support that? And I can't wait a year to come back and audition. Like, I need a job now. And I didn't want to work a real person job. You know, I didn't want food service or something like that. And so I said to my professors, like, I want to play music and make money doing that. These auditions aren't working. What can I do? And they shrugged their shoulders at me because, like, all they had been taught how to do was take auditions and keep doing that, which there aren't that many auditions in a given year, especially for like conductors. There's one conductor for 100 musicians on average.
Right, it's hard enough to get into a band than or into an orchestra, but then to be the one that's conducting it, it's even harder right now. You're like, I'm gonna come lead that? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, exactly. So, they basically said, like, if you want career advice, go ask the business school. Which, you know, at first I was a little insulted, like, aren't you the musicians? Shouldn't you be teaching me music career stuff? But then I thought about it, I was like, okay, I'll do what they told me. And I walked over to the business building. We have a really good business school in UW-Milwaukee. And I just kind of like walked in, talked to the administrator, said, hey, I'm this nerdy orchestra guy trying to make a living with music. What do I do? And that's when I heard the best advice of my music career from them. They said, you need to treat your music career as a business. And that's when everything changed.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So it was really cool because they had a couple programs, not just for business majors, but for any student that wanted to start a business. Joined up with that program, started to learn pretty much like it wasn't a whole business degree. It was just a couple simple things like how to market yourself and what that all meant. Like, how do I put together a website that actually speaks to somebody who wants to book me? And then how do I sell a gig to somebody? What are the words I need to say to persuade them to take the action of actually giving me money for my music?
So, for example, identifying their pain points, right? And then understanding, well, what can I do in my marketing that addresses those?
Exactly. And talking about their pain points on my website, which was a total mental shift for me. Like, the music people had told me, you got to put together an online portfolio of yourself, which should just have like videos of yourself and talking about all of your credentials, like 2 degrees in music and studied with so-and-so professor, and here's what my instrument looks like and is made of. And the business people told me, like, get rid of all of that stuff and choose one person that you're going to serve, and then talk about all the things that are going on inside the mind of that person that they're struggling with.
A persona. A customer sort of example. Like, this is your customer profile, Bob, who does this, and you want to sell to that guy. But you always want to make multiple personas, I feel, unless you're really mm-hmm. specific and hyper-focused.
Yeah, I mean, our music serves multiple personas.
Yeah.
But I've actually found success focusing on one persona, which is a bride-to-be. And I really dive deep into the wedding industry for my private event live laser, music business.
Laser-focused.
Yeah, but I totally agree. You can have multiple avatars, and then as a result, your website should have multiple pages, each page talking to one person at a time.
So I don't know what your digital marketing background is. It sounds like you've really been diving into it a lot. Mm-hmm. So I'm an SEO with a computer science degree, and I worked as a director of SEO at a search marketing firm, and I've spoken at PubCon and things like that about a lot of different things, like from link building to SEO and whatnot. So on this note, I find that the pain points, right, they can be like the actual search phrases, really, mm-hmm. that people are searching in. And you, what are the questions people are asking in Google? So when you go into Google and you type one of those things in, you look at the people also ask kind of things from Google, and then you start making your content on your website every week on all those things.
Yeah.
It really works. And that's what people don't understand, is like they don't realize they have to answer the query.
Right. Yeah, the query is the question. Your content, your website answers their question. It's basically like a chance to answer all of the questions that they could possibly have about you before they even have a chance to ask you.
Yep. Concierge style.
Exactly. Yeah. So I mean, to me, that was life changing, because before I even graduated, whereas the music people told me, like, wait another year and audition again, I started actually making money from my music before I graduated. I booked our first wedding, like literally within a couple weeks of me just starting my relationship with the business school. And then I realized, like, these gigs that I was booking, like, the business school helped me pick high value gigs, ones that paid a lot, and also high volume gigs, meaning ones that occurred a lot of times throughout the year. And that to me was also an important thing to think about, is like, not every gig is created equal.
Sustaining it throughout the year at different times of year, right? The winter and stuff.
For sure. Because I even like started to think about actual orchestras that I was auditioning for. How many times do they play a year? It was like 6 to 20, depending on the orchestra. Not all of them paid a full-time salary, which meant I would be getting paid 6 times a year, which was low volume. And if you have a low volume gig, that might be high value. The problem is it's going to be unpredictable income throughout the year. So if I need to make rent in December, or I need to buy Christmas presents, and I didn't have a concert that month, well, crap, I got to go get a part-time job somewhere else to fill that in. So that's why, like, weddings to me was my high volume gig, because there are thousands of weddings in my city in a year. And it was also high value because I can set my own rates. And the better I get at marketing and selling, the higher I can raise my rates every year.
Brilliant. And so you're making me think a bit here. So, like, the high value thing, I totally get it. Like, I'm a consultant. I do SEO and I have music projects. And the last thing I want to do is jump into something that's going to suck up all my time and take away from my passion. But I don't want to be like full time on the passion and then not be able to like do anything. So moving from the States back to Canada made it financially easier to do things. I only came back here because of the pandemic.
Okay.
And now I'm near my mom and my sister again. It's really actually good to be back. It's really good. But from a future point of view, like I'm hoping to go on tour next spring. I've got a record that I haven't released yet, but I thought I released it now and we're negotiating where it's going to be distributed. And I've been just waiting and waiting and going, oh my God, when is this coming out? We shot a video. So hanging kind of in there and just doing some digital marketing things right now and trying to figure out how to help musicians and have this podcast be something that people can use as a resource, bring on the friends that I made in the States and other people I'm meeting. And I would ask you, like, so what advice would you give my audience on someone who wants to get into making, to treat their business, their music career as a business? Where would you start? I know you said you went to the local music, the business school. I think that's a good thing. Any other suggestions about how to help my audience? I'd love to hear them.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, so to me, I had to like learn the hard way. I had to apply all of the business school mindset things to music. And so I actually had a couple of my friends immediately after I booked my first gig, they asked me, "How did you book that?" And so I started to teach them. And so I do teach musicians how to do this. But obviously not everybody's ready to do like a one-on-one kind of thing. So that's why I'm actually a published author. This is my
Awesome.
book, Gigging Secrets. I'm actually giving it out for free on my website, giggingsecrets.com. You just
I'll
have to
put a
pay.
little link right here.
Yeah. There's like a little bit of shipping cost, but that helps me not lose money on every book I give away for free.
Very cool. When did you finish that?
I started like writing everything that I was doing while I was learning it at the business school in 2016. And ever all throughout the last 5 years, I kept adding to the notes, deleting things that were no longer relevant. And so I finished this officially back in September. And I launched it in October.
Any feedback and how's it going?
I've gotten some really good feedback. I've gotten really good things from a lot of classical musicians who say this is like exactly what they needed. But I've gotten also feedback from singer-songwriters who say this helped them break into corporate events, which was really cool.
That's awesome. Yeah, looking more professional with your how you present yourself to corporations that go, oh, they've got their marketing down, they'll hire you. Because they know if you have your marketing down, then you probably have a good product because you spent the time to do that. It's kind of like a weird corporate thing. I worked at Nortel Networks in corporate for a while. Like it was, I was a Unix system admin and other stuff like that. So I've come from a corporate background a bit too. Like I loved it when The Office came out or even the movie Office Space.
I
was
love
just
that movie. So much
yesterday,
funny.
I posted a GIF on someone's wall yesterday of them kicking the crap out of that printer, just because it was someone was ranting, and I'm like, here you go. Oh, man, love it.
That's awesome.
So let's see here. Is there more you want to go on to about what you were telling me, or do you want to? Is there anything you want to? What are we talking about right now? I don't want to pull you away from that story. Did you have more to finish on your career story here that you were telling me? I might have pulled you. I'd do
That's
that.
okay. No, it's all good. There was a little bit more to it. So after I had started booking these high-paying gigs, by the way, this stuff isn't just about weddings. Like I hear all the time, like, oh, it'll work for weddings, but it won't work for me. Like the proof is that people have booked corporate events and nonprofit events and other things, and then they have the funding to pursue their lower paying for the moment creative things. Like that's kind of a strategy. I don't want people thinking like you have to only do weddings for the rest of your life. That's not true.
I booked a band I was in called Thermocline at Nortel in the we played the Correll Center basement for all the new employees at their new first hire day because I was part of the new recruit planning team called Party, Partee, Partee. It
That's
was like
fun.
French with an E on it, planning and research activity and research team or something. But we used to throw out like an email to 5,000 people and they would all come to the bar I chose. So then I'm like, wow, that works. It was nice to do that, but like. Yeah, corporate stuff, man. Corporate partying—that's always fun. When
For
you get your
sure.
corporation to book your band, that's the best. I remember I invoiced Nortel like, I don't know, 1,200, 1,600 bucks to play, and then 2 days later, the entire division got laid off.
That's not good.
It was January 2001. I think it was like January 5th. We played at for all the new employees who were starting, and then like a week later, they gave us all pink slips or something. It was crazy. That was
Ouch.
2001. I'm old. Anyway, we'll stay off of that topic. But
Yeah.
tell me a little bit about so do you do podcasting and things like that for to promote this, or have you done other podcasts, and how's that been going?
Yeah, I do. I have my own podcast. It's the Gigging Musician Podcast. We have about 75 episodes now, and it's fun because I get to chat about, like, hey, I just literally left a gig. Here's what went good about it. Here's what I would have done differently the next time. And then I also have some amazing guests on, and they shared their wisdom. Like, recently I did have Tracy Silverman on. He is the pioneer of the six-string electric violin.
Awesome.
He does a lot of rock and blues and jazz and contemporary stuff. Listen to his podcast. It's super cool.
What's his podcast called?
Oh man. What is it called?
Oh,
I'm gonna.
I'll put a link here. You can send it to me later.
Okay. Yeah. Sorry, Tracy. I don't remember right now. I think it's For the Greater Groove podcast. There it is.
There you go.
Yeah. So, yeah, podcasting has been a really good way to find my voice because, as a musician, we don't really talk that much. We play a lot,
I talk a hell of a lot. I'm sorry.
but yeah, that's all good. So it's been good for me to find my voice and get the word out there about what I'm doing. And I found that like the content that I put out there, it's real. It's like step-by-step stuff that people follow and they get similar positive results as when they like read my book or go through one of my training programs.
I like the gigging musician concept. So, like, I'm the musician's insider. You can see on my screens that aren't properly. Actually, let me show you something that's kind of neat. I have a computer down here that's my Resolume computer, and what I can do with this is I can, if I could just get this to, there we go. So I've got like the ability to change that stuff behind me
Oh,
by just
nice.
clicking on it full screen. So there you go.
That's
So
awesome.
yeah, and my lighting's a little off today. It's a little bright, but like that's my album cover with another thing, and I can even like blend the effects so that you can, it's like different layers. So I'm using Resolume. So I've been learning how to have that. So it's triggered through Ableton. I've got my push controller right here, and I can do like at the chorus of the song, a different video clip comes on because it's just a MIDI clip that
Yeah.
is a MIDI note that corresponds to the video file in Resolume.
Oh, that's amazing.
So I have a PC connected to my Mac. The PC runs the visuals, the Mac runs the audio for Ableton, and we use an IP connection, like it's a network connection to it, so that you can just clip, use the MIDI, like RTP MIDI kind of stuff. Really nerdy, neat stuff, but it's what the DJs were doing. So I'm like an alternative rock artist who KLOS described me from Los Angeles as I balance the fine line between EDM and rock. So I have to use these EDM tools for everything, and I play guitar, and I have a drummer. Hopefully we can jam next week. He's been out of town, but otherwise there's no bass player, and there's no I just, the keyboards are pretty much all programmed, or I want to play them.
Yeah,
It's kind of
that's
neat.
awesome.
So
That's like,
but I was just gonna say, what I wanted to get to was the gigging musician thing. So like when I played last week, what went wrong? Well, the visuals, 2 weeks ago, I couldn't do the visuals because I accidentally deleted my session of all the configuration. When I, you can hit the minus sign inside like your network thing, and you can just, I did that for something that I had someone else configure for me, and I hadn't saved it properly. So it didn't work last week because of that. But
oh.
now I know I fixed it, and I used to have this only just on half the screens, and now it's on the full screen, and now I can blend it. So like I play live every week on the internet. I've been doing that for the last 2 years because I've been trying this pandemic to end so I can actually play a live show.
Yeah.
Before that, it was a little bit like, how am I going to make this sound right live? And I wasn't really ready. But now I'm like, I want to play a show. I'm dying. It all works. Can I just freaking play already?
Right.
So I like the idea of what's wrong with my live show this week. I love that. So,
Yeah. And it applies more than just to the live show. Like, obviously, it's great for you to learn. Like, I have to avoid hitting the minus sign on the configuration. But also, like, what went right about the way that I booked this last gig? Or what didn't go right when that bride and groom said no to me?
So check this out. I booked a gig to open for a friend's band, and then they postponed the gig and said that we're gonna move it. And I said, that's fine. And then I auditioned for them.
Oh, nice.
I didn't realize that it was an opportunity that happened, but I don't know what's coming from that. I'm still waiting. So my last gig was the Viper Room in Los Angeles, and that was like almost 3 years ago
Yeah.
now, because I was in the studio. Man.
Right. And I know Canada is still a little bit more locked down than the US is. So it's
Where
tough.
and where did you find, have you traveled at all? Like, have you been in where you are in Milwaukee this time?
I've been in Milwaukee most of this time, traveling more for like family rather
Yeah.
than playing. I found that like most of my gigs are in the Milwaukee area, which is nice because I don't want to have to lug my equipment hours away just to come back.
Very cool. Well, I would love to come on your podcast anytime if you want to have someone
Yeah,
talk about
definitely.
a show and how it went wrong and things like that. I'm just checking to see how long we've been on for. I actually have to see what time we're at.
Think we're at
11:30. 30 minutes.
30 minutes, yeah.
Very cool. So, and I'll edit that part out. So, is there any stuff you want me to promote? Like any other things that you have, courses or any other links I could, you want me to talk about? You can do that now if you want. I'll edit this part out.
Okay. Yeah, so I guess one final story
Yeah, sure.
is that like once I actually started to book all of these high-paying private event gigs in volume, meaning there were a lot of them, it is a lot of work. And I found I was doing tons of administration, keeping track of all my gigs and spreadsheets and all of the people in my band with like group chats and Messenger and all that. And it was working fine until this fateful Saturday in October where I checked my spreadsheets and all my calendar notes, whatever. There were no gigs on it. And so I was like, I'm going to take my wife, Emily, out on a date to an apple orchard. And we drove an hour outside of my city. And as we're picking Honeycrisp apples, I get a phone call. And the caller ID is a wedding planner that I've worked with in the past. And you can see where I can see your body tense up and mine tensed up too. I was like shaking answering this phone call because I knew what was coming. Answered it. And the person on the other end of the line is screaming, Jared, the bride and groom walked down the aisle in 10 minutes. Where is the group? And I like froze up. I screwed up somehow. I missed a gig,
Wow,
which
I understand.
it sucks. Is the worst day of my music career. Almost probably the worst day of my life. I don't know. So I couldn't do anything. Like literally they were starting in 10 minutes.
And
I called.
it's their day.
Yeah. So
And you're the problem. Oh my God.
I felt terrible. I tried to scramble. I was like calling every string player in Milwaukee, like, hey, can you get to this wedding venue that's 20 minutes north of Milwaukee and in 10 minutes? And they
With
said,
your
no.
stuff, yeah. No
They
one's gonna
said,
save you on this one. There's nothing.
no.
All you have is an MP3 player right now that's gonna save you.
Yeah, they had a DJ, luckily.
Oh
So
my God.
I called the DJ and I said, hey, could you take one of your speakers from the reception and move it out to the ceremony and play some nice classical music for them? And he thankfully said yes, but it wasn't good enough, obviously. Like, I just still felt terrible. I refunded them their money. I actually paid for the DJ to play like the entire day just because I felt so bad.
Oh yeah.
And then afterwards, I went to the bar and drank my sorrows away. But as I was like wrapping up the night at the bar and I needed to get home, I was like, well, I can't drive. So I'm gonna get an Uber. And so as I order the ride on the app, I was like noticing the app and I really looked at Uber like with fresh eyes for the first time. And I noticed that the Uber app was basically managing a gig for the driver. It was telling the driver, here's the date and the time when you have to show up. It actually reminds the driver to show up. It shows the set list, which in this case was the itinerary. You're picking them up at this bar, driving it back at this apartment. And then it also pays the driver after the gig. It's like, huh, I wonder if something like this exists that would have prevented me from missing my gig. Nothing does. So that's when this is where my tech nerddom comes into play. I then spent a couple all-nighters whipping up this very like janky prototype of something that would do this, like kind of like an Uber, where I was the Uber company managing a gig for all of these musicians. And I put in the very next wedding, I said to the app, like, staff this gig for me, send it out to the musicians. And then it sent 4 texts and emails. It sent them to Paul, can you play violin? Catherine, can you play viola? Jared, can you play violin? And Jackie, can you play cello? And then within 30 seconds, I got a buzz on my phone. Paul is good to go for this gig. Catherine can't play, but I've already asked and secured Dana to play viola instead. And so I had this like light bulb moment. Like, I just literally solved my own problem. And so I started using that for every single gig, started adding more features to help me save time on the administrative side. So I didn't have to spend all the time writing and sending contracts and chasing down payments and all that. And eventually had this all-in-one system that was like helping me be a better band leader.
So wait, is this a released product now?
It is, yeah. It's currently a web app called BookLive. You can try it out for free at booklive.com.
I saw the domain and I was going to ask you about it. Okay, very cool. And so if I try it live as an artist, do I have like, then I have to sign up later to use it? Or how does that process work?
Yeah, there is a 2-week free trial, but ultimately there is a monthly subscription. Currently it's $40 a month, but the way that I see it is like, if I were to teach one private lesson a week, I'd be making $50 an hour for that. So that's $200 a month of just if I added one more private student. The cool thing, like, I would pay more than $40 a month to buy back my time to be able to fit in another private student or fit in more gigs, because I'm saving all that time.
Once you're using the system, it pays for itself.
Exactly.
Very cool. I love this. This is really, really... I was actually yesterday having a discussion with my friend who I'm going to go for a walk with in about 20 minutes. We walk every day at noon. About where I live is very terrible sort of taxi scene. It's just a bunch of cabs. Mm-hmm. And when people want a cab, they all want it at the same time. There's not enough. And when no one wants it, there's no one wants to start a cab company. So it's kind of a weird population because we're kind of like... 22. I'm like the Hamptons of Toronto. We're up north in the cottage area where... I mean, that's just what I call it. I don't know if it's as nice. But so... I was looking at the Uber app yesterday as well and saying, you know, and Lyft, and saying, like, if you sign up in the biggest city close to here, you can have Uber drivers around here. But I was like, is there a way we could create a network of like DoorDash drivers and Uber drivers to service this area that aren't crappy? Because it's really crappy service here. How do you fix that? And I was thinking, there's an opportunity here. There's actually a huge opportunity for people to just simply drive for Uber here. There's nobody doing it in my small town. And I'm like, man, but I don't want to be a cab driver. I'm just like, no, that's not happening. But
yeah, for sure.
What you said resonated with me on that level, because we've been thinking about ideas and I really like what you've got going on. So I'm definitely going to check out your system. I'm not booking gigs much for myself and doing that, but I want to look at it. I think it's very interesting. And if you ever want to talk nerdy SEO stuff too, I'm always down to talk offline and we can see if there's anything that we can do to help you get more customers, you know?
Yeah, definitely. We should definitely partner. That sounds amazing.
Yeah. And I'm not really selling much. Like, I'm waiting for my record to come out and I want to go on tour. I'm not really trying to monetize at the moment because I kind of have a day gig where I do SEO consulting. And I think it would be nice to sort of, I'm slowly switching into music, and the podcast is a vehicle to help me, you know, stay on top of things and feel like a public speaker while preaching in a fun, helpful way.
Yeah.
And meeting new people like yourself. Jared, really cool to meet you, Jared. I will be in touch soon. I'll let you know when we're going to launch season 2. So I've already had a few podcasts and everyone's like, when are you going to launch the next season? Because the first one, you know, we're on the second one. I'm thinking sometime in the new year, I'm going to have it all branded and we'll start rocking the second season and you'll see this episode posted. So I'll let you know.
That's awesome. It was great to meet you and I can't wait to have you on my podcast.
All right, we'll reconnect by email later, and thank you so much for joining me today.
My pleasure.